terrorist attacks in the country. How exactly is the service gearing up for a potential attack? And group within NPP calls on party hierarchy to account for all monies raised for 2012 elections. Any merit in their call? Join me in the next hour as we discuss these issues. You can also join the conversation via text 0266-677570. 0266-677570. Behind the News is live on Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale, and Garden City 92.1 in Kumasi. The Ghana Police Service is gearing up for any terrorist attack in the country. Consequently, about 130 police personnel have been drafted by the service to start specialized training in combat terrorism, crowd control and VIP protection in Accra. But are 130 police personnel all we need to put down any potential terrorism on our shores? Let's speak to the head of the formed police unit, Chief Superintendent Hamza Yakubu. Good evening, Chief, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Is the figure 130 enough to stop any threat of terrorism or terrorist attacks in the country?
Well, it will depend upon the situation we are faced with. But the truth of the matter now is that the 130 currently under training were drawn from all the police regions. And so, therefore, it means that we have a very limited numbers. What it is intended to achieve for now is to have personnel who would themselves, after acquiring their skills, be trainers of trainers, so that we can adequately have training ongoing in the regions as we prepare for a much bigger training procedure. And that is to say that the police administration has earmarked the Palugu Police Training School in the Upper East region for the establishment of a school for training of personnel in all aspects of operations.
Chief, exactly what sort of training are you giving these personnel?
Well, the personnel currently are undergoing training in counter-terrorism, crowd control, VIP protection, protection of vulnerable areas and persons. This is initially what we are trying to train. Then also SWAT, that is the Special Weapons and Tactics Team.
Well, and have you identified any potential terrorist targets in the country yet?
No, the emerging trend of terrorism or terrorist attacks would not actually enable one to be able to identify easily any target, especially if we come to take the circumstances of our country. But that notwithstanding, we are not going to be complacent and just look on unconcerned. All what we are, the police administration has directed currently is the beefing up of security in specific areas. Those areas have been identified, and we've intensified security as well as patrols in specific areas. And that is just a precautionary measure to ensure that we are not overtaken by events.
Again, Chief, how are you engaging the public as well in the fight against terrorism?
Well, we actually are embarking upon an educational drive, and that is why this interview you are having with us is so much welcome. It is security for now is a shared responsibility. These terrorists that often operate in areas where they have operated come and live with the citizens of those areas. And so, therefore, what we are saying for now is that we would urge members of the public to be the eyes and ears of security, so that when it is that they see strangers in their areas, they should just ask a word of caution or precaution, immediately notify the security agencies so we could use our intelligence to quickly conduct some background checks. We believe that if everybody lives up to this responsibility, we are likely to be able to identify miscreants before they strike mayhem into our society.
All right, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Chief Superintendent Hamza Yakubu is head of the Formed Police Unit. It's behind the news live on Radio Ghana Accra. It is no longer a secret that government is facing some challenges which is causing delays in the release of funds to MMDAs. The Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, Seth Pepe, who made the admission at a media briefing in Accra, admitted that the challenges facing the economy is as a result of the high expenditure on wages and salaries, adding that interest cost has crowded out spending on other important expenditure items. And we have been joined on the line by the Minister, Seth Pepe, to tell us more about these challenges. Good evening, Mr. Pepe, and you're welcome.
Hello, good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
You have said it before, and you are still saying that wages and salaries are as a result of the implementation of the single fine salary structure is the major cause of government's financial problems. Did government consider this thoroughly before implementing the SSS policy?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think that we should be, you know, also cautious in not putting the entire challenges that we are facing, you know, on only, you know, wages. You would recall that when we presented the budget, we identified about six items that were resulting in the excesses. Subsidy being one, wages was another one, high interest payments, you know, while the other one we identified the shortfall in the corporate income tax, particularly for the petroleum, you know, sector, and then the grants, developing partners. We outlined, you know, plans to try and bring these measures under control. As you are aware and your listeners are aware, we have since been gradually adjusting the utility and petroleum prices in order that we could bring the subsidy that is on the budget to sustainable levels. Luckily, the estimates we made for corporate income taxes for the petroleum sector, you know, is also reasonable, and therefore, as I stated today, unlike the deficit that we had last year, which was the first full year of export of crude oil, this year, instead of 700 million or approximately, we are now experiencing over a billion of revenue, so that is positive. Wages, you will recall also that we did state that the sustainable level, which is also within the ECOWAS, you know, convention criteria, is about 30-35% of the tax revenue. In our case, it is revenue that is not earmarked. We followed up, you will recall again, the budget with a whole forum where we gave details of the challenges that we are facing, that we're facing, you know, with the compensation payments. And we listed there and then also the crowding effect, which is highlighting today. So contrary to the popular view that we are now telling Ghanaians about the challenges, I think that these are issues which we have been highlighting. I think it is the impact, now that the impact is being felt because of the difficulties in making other releases. If you don't want to borrow to make some of those payments, you know, that attention is being drawn to the point that we have been making all this while. Your second question, you will recall, let me make 2 points on that, on the single spine implementation. The single spine was designed somewhere around 2007-2008. In 2009, we realized that there would be challenges with this implementation. You will recall again that implementation was suspended for almost a year before it started in 2010. And then over the course of the period, various issues kept arising. You would agree with me, even there were strikes, you know, by a section of labor as to the correct grade, you know, and others. But suffice it to say that, you know, we have come a long way, and as His Excellency, you know, directed, we have experimented in the past with previous attempts to rationalize public sector salary. For example, there was a consolidation that was done in the 1980s. Then there was the PricewaterhouseCoopers report. You remember, it says, mentioned humorously referred to as Pricewater, which is what it was known at the time. Then there was the Ghana Universal Salary Scheme, which was implemented, I believe, from 2006 to through 2000 and until the single spine replaced it, which was again put aside, and we therefore had health workers' salary schemes and others. So this, given this experience, which the process are having, the directive is for us from who to work together to make sure that for once we make the spine work. So the fact that we are highlighting challenges that are facing the country does not mean that we are completely condemning, you know, the single spine, you know, as a salary scheme. The single spine was never meant to increase salaries across the board. Inadvertently, that's what happened, which emphasizes the difficulties that we had with public sector salary. So we are where we are, and there is goodwill. The committee that was recommended in WHO has since been put in place by the Honorable Minister for Employment, and hopefully they would reach some consensus.
Well, you lay the blame among others on the implementation of the single spine policy, but the opposition has recently been on your case, arguing that the problems are as a result of mismanagement. So let me indulge you to hold the line briefly, as we have Dr. Kwejo Appiah Kubi, who is a ranking member, Poverty Reduction Select Committee of Parliament, listening to our conversation, wants to check in. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, madam.
Well, Doc, government says that single spine policy is to blame for the financial problems in the country. Now, if your side accused government of mismanagement, some will also say it was your government that passed the single spine salary structure which this government have to work with. How do you then turn around to blame government for the current problems?
Thank you very much, and greetings to all your listeners. And you are right in, and we are also right in accusing the government of blaming, putting everything on the single spine. It appears that the government, the main problem of the government is the single spine. But I believe that the single spine has done quite a lot to streamline the salary policy, the pay policy of the government, of this country. Indeed, the single spine has done a lot for this government. In any case, when this government came into power, it had every opportunity to just do away with the single spine, not to implement that policy. And the people of Ghana did agree with this government and gave this government almost 2 years, a term of 2 years, on the implementation of the single spine. And that was a good time, or a good respite for this government to put everything in order and to see to the proper implementation of this single-time policy. But what did he do? He chose to mess up. And you are right in accusing, and we are also right in accusing the government of having mismanaged the whole policy of the single-time. It wasn't a salary, as the minister said, it wasn't a policy to increase salaries across board, but they chose to do it. They can therefore not turn around and accuse the MPP of any wrongdoing. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
You are still listening to me.
Yeah.
They cannot turn around and accuse the MPP government of having mismanaged not only the implementation of the single spine policy, but also the whole economy. The minister was talking about the economy. Can you imagine, for the first time in the history of Ghana, this government has failed to implement the its own budget that it has presented to the government, to the people of Ghana. Isn't that funny? for the Minister of Finance to turn around and tell Ghanaians, oh, it is in the process of, the government is in the process of transferring monies to the district assembly, to the statutory funds. My God, this is a total breach of the Appropriation Act. Does the minister know that it is in breach of this act? I mean, it is something that probably he needs to appear before a court of competent, a court of law. I mean, the Appropriation Act was passed and was policy of this government that was presented to Parliament, and Parliament approved this budget, the government's own policy. Why is the government not implementing its own policy that it has sold to Ghanaians? It is a total mismanagement of the Ghanaian economy. And this has led to a slow increase in the poverty levels of Ghanaians. I tell you, Ghana, since the early 1980s, Ghana seems to have made major strides in terms of economic growth and poverty reduction.
Well, Doug, your argument seems to me like you doubt the minister's assertion that the single spine is to blame. But according to the minister, more than 70% of revenues go into salaries left with just a little under 25%. Would you have been able to work with that kind of funds left in the coffers?
Definitely. If the minister assess that wages and salaries account for about 70% of the budget or the tax revenue of the nation, I would tell him that is it the first time that the nation faces such a challenge? And in any case, if he faces such a challenge, that is the challenge he chose to face. Didn't he know when he wanted to be voted into power that was the situation that the nation was confronted with? He knew of it. And he accepted the challenge to deal with that problem. And then why does he throw his hands into the air? Who does he accuse for having accepted the challenge to deal with the problems confronting Ghanaians? Let me tell the minister, when the MP came to power in 2001, we faced a similar challenge. Two major expenditure items, the wages and interest payments, accounted for 96% of the total budget, the total tax revenue, 96%. It is a similar situation that we find ourselves. But the NPP government accepted that challenge. And what did they do? They showed competence. And that is what I expect from this government.
All right. Doctor,
they showed competence and brought this, revived the economy and increased revenue, the revenue base of the economy. Revenue from 2001 increased from 17% to about 27% in less than 8 years.
All right. Doctor, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Kwejo Appiah-Kubi is a ranking member, Poverty Reduction Select Committee of Parliament. And quickly back to you, Mr. Atekwe, what's your response to the issues raised by Dr. Appiah-Kubi?
Well, thank you very much. And I know Dr. Appiah-Kubi very well, but I couldn't believe it when he said that we could have thrown the single spine away if we didn't believe in it. You know, I wouldn't expect that, you know, the previous administration would hand over something which they did not believe was, you know, workable. As I stated already, you know, we reviewed the policy for a whole year. We did everything we could, and we implemented the policy in good faith. One of the things which Dr. Appiah-Kubi couldn't tell you is what estimate, you know, they handed over as would be spent, you know, on wages and salary since the policy was designed. I would expect that then if they had said that we could spend only 40% of tax revenue, you know, on the single spine and with 1070, then he could, you know, fault it. Let me also say that, you know, even on this show, I started by enumerating the six items you know, which we gave, reasons we gave for the deviation. You know, again, he continues to say that we are blaming everything on Taylor's fine. You know, I think that, I don't know if he wasn't, you know, put on when I began my show. We are not. And even in today's press conference, I did enumerate the fact that, in addition to the Taylor's fine, we also have interest payment pressures, you know, which were the interest payments, incidentally, on most of the bonds that we had to issue for projects that were put on the budget, you know, without the same funding between 2006 and 2008. You know, and then I also indicated that we were having shortfalls of dollars. I also mentioned that part of the reasons we have, you know, for the crisis, you know, sorry, for the difficulties that we were facing was the power crisis, which led to low revenue generation by GRA. Moreover, we know that gold and cocoa prices are falling. If I am, and this is the fourth press conference, you know, I have conducted on the directive of His Excellency, you know, the president. So, if Ghanaians about the state of the economy, it's about transparency. It's not about throwing, you know, hands in the air. You know, it is part of the accountability process. And we believe that, you know, it is not only good news that we should tell Ghanaians, you know, when things are difficult, we should tell them so that Ghanaians know where the problems are so that they would. And this is part of the reason, you know, that the government was elected.
So how soon are we seeing the challenges confronting government coming to an end?
Well, as I stated today, we did not present a one-year adjustment program when you have this difficult. You recall that when we presented the budget, we did say that we will see the budget realigned probably in 2 or 3 years' time, by which time we would also bring the deficit down to 5 or 6%. You would agree with me that even when you are in an IMF program, or you would also agree with me that when you talk about Spain, Portugal, Ireland, and all those countries that are having challenges, they don't attempt, you know, to resolve all the problems in 1 year. And I believe that Dr. Akubi knows that very well because I've entered into an IMF program, you know, before. You take your time. And the reason is that if you attempt to do everything in 1 year, you bring everything, you know, the economy also to a halt. Are we to dismiss public servants? No, what you have to do is to reason with public servants. You know, if you wanted a quick solution and bring it down, then you would have to, you know, lead to those sort of radical measures. But as I said, there was a whole forum and it was agreed that certain things should be done. And that is exactly what we are following. And we believe that we'll be able to. Let me emphasize that I did explain a number. I said that the arrears, you know, which were paid last year and this year are not repetitive. Next year, we are not going to be paying arrears.
All right.
And that alone would also start bringing down. I also did indicate that this year, we did a salary increase of 10%. And considering that salaries have been going up over the last 3 or 4 years, we expect modest increases in salary, which would help, you know, the adjustment. This is part of the delegation. The other decision that was reached was that, you know, the negotiations before the budget is read so that we can put things in better perspective.
All right.
So it is not as though we do not have, you know, measures to address, you know, we are not throwing our hands in the air at all. And I dispute the figure that 96, at a point in time in this nation's history, we use 96% to pay only salary. How were we able to service, you know, our debt, considering that our debt service commitments, you know, have never, within the 4%, did we borrow? And if we had to borrow to pay interest and other things out of 4%, then I would say that, you know, that is so. I dispute that, you know, very much, that we ever spent 96% of wages.
We want to thank you for your time with us tonight, Sid Tekwe, as the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Let's quickly read some of your text messages. And this one says, government should try hard to put Ghana's economy in good shape and stop running the economy like a Zonto motorbike. Wow, that's from Zibo Mohammed in Wenchi. Ata John Bremai Esiam says, throughout history, it has been the inaction of those who could have acted, the indifference of those who should have known better, the silence of the voice of justice when it mattered most that made it possible for evil to triumph. Well, what is the import of your message, Mr. Atejan? S.A.D. Nicholas from University of Education, Winneba, says the security services should strongly collaborate to avoid terrorist attacks in Ghana. Timamu Adam Adu Akra says the recent tariff increments announced by the PURC is unfair and unacceptable. Is this the better Ghana? Only God can save us from the economic hardship. And Andrew Manga in Boko says all Ghanaians must put their shoulders to the wheel of progress and push for development. Napoleon from Tumu Sankofa Bay says the police should intensify their patrol teams at the borders to prevent any terrorist attacks in the country. It was predicted, and now the signs are clear on the wall. The ripple effect of not being decisive, but having to turn the duration of senior high school into what some termed the political chessboard has led to more than half of over 90,000 applicants from the two batches of senior high school graduates seeking admission to three public universities this academic year unsuccessful. The government had allocated 7 million Ghana cedis to expand intake at public tertiary institutions. It looks like the situation still remains dire. So where would the fate of these students lie? Do they have to look elsewhere? All their dreams are shattered. What plans has government for these unsuccessful ones? We find out, and we have been joined on the line by Jeff Onyame, Deputy Registrar, University of Cape Coast. Good evening, Jeff, and you are welcome to the program. Hello, Jeff, can you hear me?
I hope you can hear me. I hear you all right.
How many students knocked at your door for university admission, and how many could you admit?
Well, we had about 23,600 applications for this academic year, and we'll take around 6,000, which is close to about 50% increase over last year's intake. Which is close to about 50% last year's intake.
Meaning last year, how many?
We took some 4,835, so going close to 6,000 would give you close to about 50%.
Now, let's talk about expansion of infrastructure, because we understand the government made moves to expand some infrastructure. Which areas were expanded at the University of Cape Coast?
Well, we didn't have any projects going. We understood that they were going to help complete projects that were at a given stage of completion. But we didn't have any such projects, and so we are admitting people into the facilities we had as of last year.
So with this number of 6,000, wouldn't it put?
Well, of course we'll be stretched more than we were last year. But we are trying to make do with what we have. We know that two cohorts actually came out this year, and we know the numbers have gone up, and so. We are also making some effort to absorb those who came out here.
But looking at your admissions, did you also face crisis in the admissions?
Crisis? When you say crisis, what exactly is it?
The normal crisis.
Of course, we have more people than we can take. That, I believe, is a crisis unto itself. And of course, people are trying to go into other places. I know some of the applicants selected almost all the public universities and are looking at which ones give them admissions, and of course they weigh their options and decide where to go. And so when you give you admit people, you send letters to people, you expect that not all of them will come. You have to replace those who would have chosen other places and not your place. And so these are some of the challenges, of course, we are admitting people, as I said already, into limited facilities, and that for us is a huge challenge, because then they will have to manage the limited facilities that are here. And perhaps the other thing is that we may end up, given the number we want to take, we may end up having some of them as non-resident students. Whereas in times past, we try to accommodate all the persons who are in the first year.
But under normal circumstances, what number is the university supposed to admit?
Well, it's not what number the university is supposed to admit. We try to admit people that are different. For instance, we have this policy that talks about in, out, 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 which is in respect of accommodation. We try to house all fresh students because we think that most of them would be new to the environment, and therefore we should house them and only send them out to look for their own places when they have spent a year and have become familiar, if you want, with the environment. What has happened is that they are not able to do that this year. So of course, we hover around 4,800, as I said earlier, and that's the number we took last year. And so that is about what number we take. We stabilize around that number. And so going beyond 5,000 to 6,000 is some challenge, as I said earlier.
All right, Jeff, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Jeff Onyame is Deputy Registrar, University of Cape Coast. And we also have on the line Deputy Minister of Education in charge of tertiary education, Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa. Good evening, Mr. Ablakwa, and you're welcome.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, over 90,000 applicants to three major universities for 2013-2014 academic year, and over half could not gain admission. How does government feel about this?
Well, let me say good evening to you and to all our cherished listeners. I must indicate that so far as we are concerned as government, we think that it is too early to draw conclusions because we are still monitoring the situation, and our indication is that admissions are continuing. Even when these admissions are done, it will depend on how many are accepting and whether people on a waiting list will be considered and all of that. So there are these considerations which will have to come in as we do the analysis about the fact that we are not yet at the end of the road. Having said that, it is also important to recall that during the preparations for this admission period, government had made some interventions that made some allocations available for completing projects which were nearing completion, so that more numbers could be absorbed, and also another provision for the procurement of furniture. Those pieces of furniture have also begun arising and are being distributed, which we also expect will make a difference. So at this stage, we would not say that we are at a point where we can do conclusive analysis. We also do know that there are more than 140 tertiary institutions. And so the focus should not be on only universities. There are polytechnics, and it's only this evening that I had to announce that we have reached a resolution on the D7E8 issue, where polytechnics can now admit these students, except that they will run an access course, and within 3 months they'll take an exam supervised by NAPTEX, so that we can have the polytechnics absorbing a lot more numbers than the 19,000 which had applied so far, and out of which only 3,000 of the 19,000 were qualified if you look at the B7E8 minimum requirement. Having said that also, it's important to look at how many students are also being absorbed by the colleges of education, how many are being absorbed by the private universities. We have about 66 of them, and also how many are being absorbed by the various professional institutions, the nursing training colleges, the marketing institutions, accounting institutions, and all of that. So we have a holistic view of this. And in this era also, you need to remember that people do not apply to only one institution. They don't put all their eggs in one basket. So if you are doing the analysis, you don't factor this in. The fact that 90,000 people may have applied to Legon and say they are taking only 20,000, just as an example, it doesn't mean that these 90,000 that applied to Legon, they did not in the same breath apply to, say, UCC or KNUSC or UDS or Central University or Ashesi University or Accra Poly or Takoradi Poly. So there are so many variables that you need to consider when you are doing this analysis before you can come to a conclusion that perhaps so many people have been left out. Now, we need also in this discussion to remember that there are other admissions that will be coming up in distance learning and then in sandwich programs still at some of these universities for those who remain so committed to entering their university. So there are all these options available, and one needs to consider all of them.
Well, you mentioned the expansion of the public universities to accommodate the increased number of applicants. But speaking to the registrar of the University of Cape Coast, it looks like nothing of that sort occurred there.
Well, we keep getting some of these reports. You know that I did engage in a tour of the universities and the polytechnics, especially those who were benefiting from this government intervention. And we had assurances that we will see increased numbers this year because of the interventions government was making. We keep getting some concerns from various quarters that perhaps that may not be the case and that admission numbers are looking similar to what happened last year. But as I said, I do not want to be conclusive at this stage because the processes are ongoing. And when we come to an end of the admissions, then one can do the analysis and compare this year's numbers with the intake numbers of last year. Then we can be very sure, but at this stage, I think that it will be quite premature.
But then, talking about the expansion, what form would it take? Is it going to be more lecture halls or more computers or halls of residence?
Oh, we had identified a number of academic facilities that were nearing completion, 70% or more completed. And these were the facilities that we identified, and we made some 7 million Ghana cedis available. I think more accurately, it was 7.5 million Ghana cedis available for these projects to be completed ahead of the admissions. We also noticed that there were some institutions that needed furniture, and that with furniture alone, we could double intake. Institutions like the University of Professional Studies in Accra, the Cape Coast Poly, University of Education, Winneba said with furniture, they could also look at almost 40% more increment. So we did ensure that these pieces of furniture were procured. I do know that about 2,000 have come, and there are more on the way. We, in all, are procuring in excess of 30,000 pieces of furniture, if my memory serves me right. And it is in these forms, including approving requests for more lecturers to be employed, because you know that you have to have an eye on the lecturer-to-student ratio, because staffing needs are also very important. It's not only about infrastructure, furniture, and other equipment, but you also need to increase the lecturers, and we have been keeping an eye on that aspect of the equation also.
All right. So what are you telling parents who are worried that their children are not getting admissions, and then the students themselves? What assurances are you giving them?
We will continue to encourage them not to give up and to also remind them that there are many, many options. This year is a peculiar year. It's very, very competitive. However, there are many, many options. There are the sandwich programs, the distance learning programs, there are the private universities, there are about 66 of them. They are doing very well. We have the 10 polytechnics. We have dozens of other professional institutions. And so it is important that if you do not get your first choice or exactly what you want, you do not give up, because there are many options. And I'm also noticing a trend where some get admissions, but they are not too keen on the courses that they have been given. We also want to encourage them that some of the courses, some of the careers that people want to take to, you can still get to that route, either as a second degree or as you do the program, you will have another option in some further studies when you have concluded this program. In other words, what I mean is that if you wanted to do medicine because of the tough competition, you couldn't do medicine now. Many do not know that you can do medicine as a second degree. So if you do a related program, say nursing, pharmacy, you can always have a second chance. So I think that we should just calm down. Let's allow the system to flow. Let's open our eyes to all the options available to us, and we'll be fine at the end of the day.
We want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Samuel Lukujeta-Blakwa is Deputy Minister of Education in charge of tertiary education, and we are also joined on the line by Vincent Ankama Lumute, who is the Public Relations Officer of the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. Good evening, Vincent, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
Vincent, how many students applied for admissions at KNUSA, and how many could you admit?
We had close to 41,000 applicants, of which less than 30,000 were qualified for admission at the point where the results were released. As of today, we've admitted 17,501.
And has the admission process come to an end?
It is ended. We have matriculation tomorrow.
You have matriculation tomorrow. Looking at the admissions compared to last year, of what percentage increase was this year's admission over last year's?
Well, significantly, the percentage is quite high. Last year, we admitted close to 11,000. But this year, as I mentioned, we've gone past 17,000. So you can just see the margin of increase is quite high.
Now, with this 70,000 applicants, is it all that the university could take, or there are more?
Yes, that is all we can manage for now. In fact, it's not all of them who are regular candidates. Some of them are coming as distance learning students. Others will be doing the parallel program. And so that is all we can absorb for now.
And has there been any move by government or the university for expansion this year, infrastructure-wise?
Yes, as the Deputy Minister said, there are efforts by government to help us complete some of our ongoing projects. And infrastructure-wise, yes, we're making efforts, and government is supplementing. But see, it doesn't only take structures. We need labs, we need staff. And so just putting up buildings is simply not enough. It will take a period of time to do this.
All right, Vincent, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Vincent Ankama Lumute is Public Relations Officer of the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. And we are also joined on the line by Dr. A.Z.T. Zakaria, who is a registrar, UDS Tamale. Good evening, Dr. and you are welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you.
How was the admissions this year? How many could the university take?
This year, we have so far been able to admit about 5,600 students.
$5,600
is the target we have set for ourselves for this year.
But how many applied?
Yeah, we had applications for undergraduate program about 18,000. And out of this number, a good number did not qualify. But we still have qualified applicants over 10,000. It is out of these 10,000 that we are admitting about 5,600.
So looking at the dynamics, do you think you have admitted enough or there is more room for more?
For our facilities, this about the number we can admit. We have really increased the intake this year. Last year it was about 3,500, between 3,500 and then 3,600. Our aim this year was to double the intake, because we are aware that we're dealing with two streams of WASI graduates, those who did a three-year program and those who completed a four-year program. Unfortunately, however, our facilities did not or will not allow us to double the intake. But we've gone quite far. That is from 3,500 last year to about 5,600 this year.
Well, Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. A.V.T. Zakaria is a registrar, UDS Tamale, and Dr. Steve Mantia is campaign coordinator, ICDECAN, is joining us. Good evening, Doc. You're welcome.
Good evening.
Well, Doc, over half of about 90,000 applicants could not gain admission to three major universities fall out from two batches of senior high school students. Are we getting things right? Hello.
Thank you for the opportunity to share my perspective on this challenge. For me, the situation we find ourselves in today is an indictment on the manner in which we go about formulating state policy. We do sometimes formulate policies without projecting into the future to see what will be the outcome of those policy initiatives we implement today. And that is why we find ourselves in this situation, because we shouldn't have waited to get into this situation in the first place, because at the time when we decided really to vary the time limits for going through the secondary school education, we should have envisaged that come 2013, we'll be dealing with two streams of students seeking admission to tertiary institutions. Therefore, we would require some expansion of the infrastructure, the facilities for teaching and learning to be able to take place. And again, also ensuring that there will be adequate teaching personnel to be able to teach these students. As it is now, we found ourselves in a situation where many of the students who otherwise would have been qualified to enter university education would be without access to tertiary education. That, for me, is an unfortunate situation.
But with this situation, is there any hope of an end to changes on our educational front?
Yeah, if we allow the technocrats to work and stop and the politicians stop meddling in the management of education in this country, maybe, yes, we'll be able to get a handle on this problem and once and for all. But we are in a situation where whenever there's a change of government, then the new government decides to play politics in terms of its own manifesto promises with respect to what you do with education, and begins to undertake changes that are not, for me, are not one that is actually all-encompassing. I think the time has come for us to have a collective national approach to policies in the education sector, so that this partisan way of looking at the challenges and the problems of the sector is done with once and for all.
So, Doc, what is the solution to the current admission crisis?
It's really difficult to envisage the way out because, one, once the facilities aren't there, then there is actually no way you can actually force or try and get all the students enrolled. And so definitely we're going to have some students who are very qualified for university education or any other form of tertiary education staying at home for a year. I think this we've been through this before when the university, lecturers went on strike for a very prolonged period, and as a result of which there was a backlog of students seeking admission. And that is exactly what actually provoked the introduction of the sixth form national service. And so maybe yes, we need to find a way to engage those who will not find admission, the hope that in subsequent years they might be able to get admission to school. So for me, the youth employment program that we have in place could be one viable way of engaging these children in a very useful venture.
All right. Doug, we want to thank you for your time with us. Dr. Steve Mantia is campaign coordinator. I, Sudeka, briefly let's read some of your text messages. And Karim from Limera, Sisela West says, oh, President of Ghana, train more police to protect our country for us. Gatti James from Ho says, Ghana Security Services must protect the country so that we will not witness what happened in Kenya. Gatha, God bless you for accurate news presentation. Thank you. And Gilbert from Kintampo says, we thank the finance minister for his statement today, but they should be quick in releasing the money because our assemblies need money for development. And Daniel Kaku from Elembele says, let's have hope in the government because this government is still working for us. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It appears the new Patriotic Party is yet to recover from the shock of the Supreme Court verdict which dismissed the petition filed by the three leading members of the party after the criticism of some leading members of the party who waged relentless campaign for Nana Akufo-Addo to be retained as the party's presidential candidate for the 2016 election. The NPP has again been hit by another attack, this time by a group in the party which goes by the name the Patriotic Future. The group is calling for an audit of the party's accounts for the 2012 elections. According to the group, funds released for the 2012 elections were diverted by some individuals for personal gains. Again, according to the group, the party's polling agents for the 2012 elections have not been paid their allowances, and that membership dues and party contributions, as well as money for text messages and membership drive, cannot be accounted for. And Behind the News tonight, we find out what the real situation is. And joining us on the line is George Miracle Duka, who happens to be the convener of the Patriotic Future of the NPP. George, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Why this strong-worded statement against your own party?
Let me say good night to your cherished listeners. We, the Patriotic Future, are requesting that our national leadership, I mean Jacob Echebi Lampe and Sir John, come to realization that it is time for us to take introspection of whatever we went through. We need to take our time, reflect soberly, and know why we were rigged. Whether the rigging took place in the police station, on the student level, or at the regional level. These are procedures that we need to take our time to go through. Let me give you a critical example. The Republican Party, after losing power, came home, sat down, reflected over the issue, then came out with certain possible solutions to curb those challenges. Now, they stated in their report that the Republican Party cannot continue to present themselves as angry white men to the people of America. They indeed stated that the Republican Party is full of stuffy old men. These were signals that they picked within their party in taking advantage of reflecting over what happened. We are saying that during the primary, pretended that parliamentary experts are supposed to pay 16,000 Ghana, and that they were going to pay back 40% of the 16,000 to the various constituencies to work with. Now, people are saying and asking, where is that 40% they promised? They didn't send the 40% back to us. Then we have the advantage of losing this election and not even respecting those in the polling station to even find out. And it just come up to say that we want to elect our flag bearer first. If the car engine is not working, how do you bring on board a driver? Why don't you repair the car? Why don't you repair the brakes, the clutch, the accelerator? Then when we get the car in good condition, then we look out for a driver.
Well, George, you seem to have a problem with your party chairman. What exactly is your beef with him? Because we'll be speaking to him soon.
Yes, he's been all over. He's been on PCFM. He's been on Oman FM, saying that he's going to, you know, find ways and means to ensure that his proposal is accepted by all. And he didn't mention democratic, you know, means. He said he's going to find any means possible to ensure that his proposal is respected or accepted by all. And that is what we are trying to avoid.
But I've heard your party chairman say that he doesn't know you in the party, and that if you have any concerns, you should rather channel it to the party.
But he wrote an open letter to the media, and open letter tells me that I have the opportunity to respond. And he was on air, he was on PCFM. Why couldn't he discuss those things internally? So if you have been on air discussing such issues, then you give me also the chance to come up and point out my views to you. Because what is good for Goose is equally good for Ganda. So we need to respect each and everyone. Not to say that because somebody is this and the group is not. Forget about the group. The group has been in existence. We've been working on the ground. And maybe the executive, you have not been on the ground. As an executive person, you will not see this group. I have been a polling station chairman before.
Right.
I have been a constituency executive before. I have been, a Tescom president before. I have been a municipal chief executive before.
All right. George, we have to end it here. We want to thank you for your time with us. Unfortunately, we have not been able to establish contact with Jake Obitibi Lamte for his side of the story. And it's behind the news. Let's read one or two of your text messages. And Bala Abdullahi from Gosu says, a man who refuses to admit his mistake can never be successful, but if he confesses and forsakes them, can't get another chance. It is the biggest apology that government can render to the good people of Ghana by coming out to explain the current challenges of the economy. And Rufai in Tamale says, Ghana is not a poor country. It is bad and corrupt people who are managing the affairs of our dear nation. Posterity will judge them. And Abuba from Nima says, government has missed the right policy direction and therefore need a proper consultation for the interests of the nation. And this one too from a loud one says, happy birthday to Christopher Isidu, one of our producers. And from the Behind the News crew, we also say happy birthday to you and long life. And this is where we end tonight's edition of the program. My producers were Edmund Tete, Felix Kofi, Christopher Sedi, John Toby, and Celestina V. Barbara Yakubu read the summaries, and Roxanne Wood and Gifty Broom were the sound engineers. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely night.